The John Murray Show on RTE Radio 1 with Kia Credit. Flexible 142 finance solutions from Kia, home of the 7-year warranty.
Podcast today's show at rte.ie/John Murray.
The John Murray Show on RTE Radio 1.
Our text number is 51551. Our email address, john@rte.ie. Now, he's one of the world's best-known adventurers, but it's the escapades of his ancestors that feature in his latest project, a book called Agincourt, My Family, The Battle and the Fight for France. Sir Ranulph Fiennes, good morning.
Very good morning to you, John.
And tell us about this decision to write the book. How did it arise?
Obviously, this coming year is full of centenaries, like the First World War 100 years ago, 1915 in the trenches. There'll be a lot of books about that. 200 years ago, 1815, Battle of Waterloo, lots of books about that. My one is 600th anniversary, so going back a bit further, the Battle of Agincourt, and so it's coming up for its 600th anniversary next year, and that's why it's coming out this week.
And you had people, and you had ancestors essentially on both sides of the war.
Yeah, they were on both sides, that's quite true, and they were right at the top of both armies. And one lot, in fact, which is very unfortunate, because I went to France to try and find my relations, if you can call them that, because we came from the same village, and discovered after a bit that they had been wiped out at the Battle of Agincourt by the Brits. So my original French cousins, although it's spelt the same way, over here it's pronounced Fiennes, and over there it's pronounced Fienne, and the castle, the Chateau de Fienne, was destroyed later by Henry VIII, but you still have the Forest of Fiennes, the Forêt de Fienne, and Mont Fienne, Mount Fiennes, from which the top of which you can see the coast of England. The village of Fienne is where the Counts of Boulogne came from, and the Lord, the Seigneur de Fienne, Fiennes, Eustace, or Eustache, was in command of the Norman army under King William the Conqueror, Duke William as he was at the time. He was a Norman, whereas my ancestor Eustace was Count of Boulogne, which was very different to Normandy. But they came together because when William wanted to attack the UK, he didn't have enough ships, so he made friends with Cousin Eustace, who provided all the ships, and was put in charge of the invading army that invaded at the Battle of Hastings. So if you look on the record of that, the Bayeux Tapestry, you can actually see ancestor Eustace with the flag of the family, which is the same today as it was back then in 1066, unchanged. And he's commanding the, shall we say, Norman army, not French army, against King Harold of the UK. And in the battle, which is depicted in the tapestry, you can see Cousin Eustace, as we call him, telling Duke William, later to be King William the Conqueror, that the French, the Normans, must retreat because the English are winning. And whilst they can still make it back to the ships, they should retreat. So Cousin Eustace is very sensibly advising them to go back to France, to Normandy. But he gets two fingers from William, and then the battle changes, and the rest is history. So by not listening to Cousin Eustace, the Normandy invasion took place. And it's because of the Norman invasion that you get the Hundred Years' War and the Battle of Agincourt. So just as some students killing the emperor in Sarajevo started the First World War, this turning point of the Battle of Hastings started the 100 Years' War. And I run right the way through with all my cousins, including some very nasty ones, one of whom killed Edward II with a red-hot poker up his backside. And, yeah, there were one or two very unpleasant Fiennes around at that time. And then there was another one who had his head cut off by the Peasants' Revolt from Kent, because he was the Chancellor of the Exchequer. His name was James Fiennes, or in Shakespeare he's called Lord Say, and he was the first Lord Say. Today in the family castle we have the 25th Lord Say, so in direct line all the way through over 600 years. And so I'm very lucky that on both sides we had very important finders in charge. So we've got top blokes on both sides. We've got records of what they got up to and how they were killed and so on. So I put this all into the book.
And is there a particular ancestor you like the least?
Well, I think the one that committed adultery with the Queen of England and then got locked up in the Tower of London and then escaped, one of the few people to abseil out of the Tower of London with outside help. And one of the outside helpers later got made into Mayor of London. And then, having escaped, he got back to more adultery with the Queen, Isabel, and Edward II obviously didn't like it, and there was big trouble, but the Queen and cousin Roger managed to oust Edward, King Edward II, and put him in Nick, in fact, in Berkeley Castle. But unfortunately, people tried to rescue him and say they thought he's best off dead, but we can't actually be seen to kill him, so he must die unsuspiciously. So they opened up the floorboards underneath the room where he was captured and shoved lots of diseased dead bodies in there to fester and for the smell and the putridity to come up through the floorboards where he was to die, so he would die naturally, well, sort of naturally. He didn't, and therefore they devised a system at night whereby they put a sort of hollow horn container up that part of his body, and into it they then inserted the red-hot poker into his innards. And a lot of people did hear him screaming that night, as is recorded, and Shakespeare goes into it quite a bit, and he did die. And so Cousin Roger and the Queen ruled the country thereafter for quite a bit until they got done.
And do you think your passion for pushing yourself beyond the limits came directly from your ancestors?
Well, I don't know, but I certainly didn't know about them beforehand. In fact, I didn't really know much about my father and my grandfather because both of them were dead before I was born. My father was killed in the Second World War 4 months before I was born. So I didn't really know much about my ancestors at all until I did start the research. And I was very lucky because, as I say, the castle has been in the family hands for 600 years. And my cousin said, go up to the attic and got all the paperwork there. So I didn't have to tramp around gravestones in France.
And in terms of reaching the poles, do you think everything has been done now? Has everywhere been reached? And now people are looking to do it in a specific way?
Yeah, I know what you're saying. There are so many mountains all over the world with horrific, and I really mean that, cliffs, 6,000-foot sheer cliffs. And so climbers are able to do firsts. But with poles, there are only two proper poles. People invent all sorts of funny invisible poles and magnetic poles, etc. But two real poles at the ends of the Earth, the geographic poles, there are only two of them. This number is not going to increase, and so it is a bit of a rat race amongst the polar fraternity as to getting the polar records. Now, there's only one remaining geographic, real hard polar record to be done. The rest have been knocked off by our group or the Norwegians over the last 40 years and more. And what you're sort of saying is one has to get a bit specific, apart from this one which I'm talking about. And to get specific, and other people might call it gimmicky, you have got to be the sort of first person with no toes, first blind person, the youngest person, the oldest person, whatever. Now, that sort of thing is good for raising money for charity, so that's absolutely fine. But in terms of calling them geographical records, you know, like first on a pogo stick or first to the South Pole on a camel, they are a bit gimmicky. The big, real man against the element expeditions have but one been done for the polar. And I would say for ocean sailors pretty much as well. But then, you know, anyone can climb a mountain, Snowden, Ben Nevis, whatever, and it's a personal challenge. Anything can be a personal challenge for anybody. You don't have to go for the really big ones.
And you got severe frostbite on one expedition to the North Pole, and you had to cut off part of your fingers yourself.
I didn't have to cut them off, but my wife and I decided that it would be a good idea because we were having to wait for 5 months. Now, after the trauma of losing the half of every finger and thumb, you've got sitting on the end, if you can look at your hand, you can imagine that the ends of them, i.e. half of each finger, is mummified and sticking like a red talon because it's been frozen. And what's going to happen is that that's going to be amputated, otherwise gangrene and so on. So you would think that you come straight back to hospital and get them amputated and new skin makes new ends over the fingers, the half fingers. But they won't do it for 5 months. And I won't bother to explain why, but they've got good medical reasons for waiting 5 months after the trauma, after the event. So I'm sitting at home, having got back from the polar regions, with the fingers like that. Every time you touch something by mistake with those dead fingers, where the dead hits the live is open nerves, and it is very, very painful. And it's actually quite difficult, particularly at night, not to touch things with those fingers. And my wife said I was getting very irritable, and I suppose I was. So we decided that we would get a Black & Decker in the woodshed and a micro saw and sort of cut them off as near to the live nerve ends as possible so that they wouldn't be sticking out after that. So, and that went quite well. I took 2 days to get through the thumb because of the big bone in the middle and so on. But, yeah, the physiotherapist in Bristol said I'd done a good job.
Was there no pain?
If there was pain, you just move it away a little bit from the live area up into the mummified area.
I see. But you were happy to do it. Well, not happy to do it. You just felt it had to be done because you weren't going to wait until you got back into hospital.
I was apparently getting very unpleasant.
What are the things that you would still like to do?
Well, there is one particular thing which we've been working at, which is the first winter crossing of Antarctica. And that means doing it in between the equinoxes. So your average is going to be about minus 80 instead of about minus 30, which is what we have done. We did the first ever unsupported crossing of the continent, I think about 10 years ago, in summer when the temperature never dropped below minus 50 centigrade. And we never used any form of artificial heat, not even hand warmers. And we had nothing except what we started with on the coastline to the other coast.
Have you any plans for retirement, by the way?
I don't think I could afford to retire.
In other words, you need things to write about.
Yeah, I've got to keep my wife going.
Well, the book is called Agincourt, My Family, The Battle and the Fight for France, and it's written by Sir Alan Fiennes. Thanks a million for joining us this morning, and happy exploring.
Thanks a lot, John.
Thank Cheers. You.
Podcast today's show at rte.ie/John Murray.
The John Murray Show on RTE Radio 1.